1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 20 to 21. No, but the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God. I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too. You cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. This is the verse that is generally quoted when justifying the belief that ancestors are demons. I was going to explain how this interpretation is actually not accurate, even in the context of the Bible, but the purpose of this episode, and in fact the entire podcast, is never to dispute the Bible or anyone else's beliefs for that matter. So, out of respect, I will leave this verse as it is. What I do want to do is to get into how the verse translates into a different language and a different culture. In the previous episode, I took 1 Samuel 28 through the same process, focusing on the Zulu translation, and this time we're going to do a Setswana translation. To start off with, let me read the verse again. No, but the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God. And I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too. You cannot be part of the Lord's table and the table of demons. Now, this is the same verse in Setswana. Kare, dilo tse ba di tshaba ba di isang ditlhabelo ba di isetsa badimo e seng modimo. Ga ke rate lwa bolena le kabalano le badimo. Ga loka ke lwana senwelong sa morena le senwelong sa badimo. Galoka ke lwa jela mo lomating lwa morena le mo lomating la badimo. If you don't understand Setswana, it's fine. I will basically be focusing on two specific words. In the first line, according to this Bible, the word demon is translated into badimo in Setswana. But the truth is that linguistically, badimo does not translate as demons. In fact, these are two completely different concepts altogether. Badimo are what we loosely call ancestors, but this is a very, very loose translation. Firstly, the word badimo is a derivative of the word mudimu, which means God. The prefix ba means they, which then translates the word badimo into they of God. So by referring to badimo as demons, it also implies that the very conception of God within the Setswana culture is also demonic. Secondly, the word badimo does not solely refer to the spiritual practice of reverence of ancestors, but it functions as a reference to a historical genealogy as well. This is why we call them ancestors. It is a way of people keeping record of their history and by extension their culture and to a very large extent their very identity. By interpreting badimo as demons, you are essentially demonizing not just their spirituality, but also their entire culture, their history, and their very existence. This translation was very simplistic. It was extremely lazy, and it was very, very harmful and very, very intentional. Let me tell you how this came to be. Robert Moffat was a Scottish missionary to South Africa in the 1800s. He is credited as being the first translator of the Bible into Setswana, and he's the one who came up with this interpretation. In the process of translating, he, by his own admission, had a very poor grasp of the Setswana language. Trying to find a Setswana equivalent of demons proved challenging since there was no such concept in the Setswana cosmology. The only spiritual entity that he was able to connect demons to was Badimo. Nonetheless, even though this was extremely misleading and entirely wrong, there was a very specific reason why he stuck with it. There was an extremely challenging obstacle standing in his path to evangelizing the Batswana. That obstacle was dingaka, healers, isangoma. In his 1842 book called Missionary Labors and Scenes in Southern Africa, this is how he describes sangomas. They are our invertebrate enemies and uniformly oppose the introduction of Christianity among their countrymen to the utmost of their power. They constitute the very pillars of Satan's kingdom. By them, Satan's throne is supported. In employing this translation, he was targeting healers because he believed that they possessed, in his own words, an influence over the minds of the people, superior even to that of their king. Since he could not take on the healers, he decided to target the people's belief in Badimo. He also goes on to say that Satan is obviously the author of polytheism of other nations. He has employed his agency with fatal success in erasing every vestige of religious impression from the mind of the Batswana, the Hottentots, and the Bushmen, leaving them without a single link to unite them to the skies. This basically means that he believed that Batswana and the Khoi and the San did not have a concept of God, and by extension, they were devil worshippers. In the verse that we've been discussing, there's a line that says, "You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons too." From this verse, certain cultural practices are brought into the firing line. The cup of the Lord is metaphoric, biblically. However, in African spirituality, the cup of the ancestors is more literal. In any kind of traditional celebration or gathering, there is the drinking of umqombothi from ukamba, unko, which is like a clay pot. During these events, there is an aspect of sharing drink with ancestors and the people around you. In Robert Moffat's translation, by consequence, this directly speaks against such practices of sharing drinks amongst the people because it is seen as an extension of sharing a drink with demons. Robert Moffat had a singular goal in his work, which was, in his own words, to introduce elements of a spiritual empire, to sweep away any refuge of lies, to prostrate idols and altars, to abolish rites and ceremonies, to turn the world upside down. What all of this boils down to is the importance of context. Later on, I'll go through why context is so crucial in how we engage with other people's beliefs. But for now, let's go back to the conversation with Ukoko Aubrey Machikwe about African spirituality in the Christian church. Please note that this is part two of this discussion. And if you haven't listened to part one yet, please do so. Otherwise, enjoy.
So again, when we look at the African indigenous churches, it must be in contradistinction to other African families who took up their Christianity in the Anglican Church, the Catholic Church, the Methodist Church, and so on, the so-called traditional Christian churches. You know, so the way I look at it, and it causes me a lot of conflict, by the way, spiritually. Mm-hmm. The way I look at it is this, that you have someone like me, Ongenwe Sithunywa, Sithunywa Sekawe, Sithunywa Sesonto, because I have ancestors who converted to Christianity. And these ancestors, abasingenayo, as izithunywa zecawe or izithunywa zesonto, spirits of prayer, spirits of the church, want us or want through us to continue with their Christian work.
Okay. Now, before we carry on further with that, I want to first start off with some common ground.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that I've realized about churches, when I reflect as a person who now practices African spirituality, when I reflect back in my time in the church, there's very one major distinction that I see between the traditional churches and the African initiated churches, or rather the normal Eurocentric churches, you know, from Europe and from America, is that there's a distinct shying away from spiritual gifts.
Yes.
Right. I don't ever remember growing up in church in the Methodist and hearing spiritual gifts being openly spoken about.
Yes, yes.
It was that only a very, very select few people in the church had some kind of a gift.
Yes.
And so in my experience, I went from the normal Methodist church, you know, in the township that I grew up in. And then when I was in varsity, then I went to the white churches, your more charismatic churches. Well, they weren't necessarily charismatic, but even then, only you know, there would be like one person who sort of like, you know, a legendary person who has the gift of prophecy.
Yes.
But that was not something that was freely talked about or spoken about. And it wasn't something that was, spiritual gift wasn't something that is necessarily encouraged. Like, you could never go to your church leader and say, I have a spiritual gift. It was only the gift of prophecy that was given to only a select few. Whereas in African indigenous churches, these are the very basis of the church. Spiritual gifts form the very core of the church. The fact that people have can heal, people can prophesy, people can, you know. So I've always been trying to understand, why is it that the European churches almost view spiritual gift as a taboo?
Yes.
Whereas African churches then embrace it as a part of their DNA.
Well, Mkijima, the one we spoke about a few minutes ago, was kicked out of the church because he was a prophet. And some of his prophecies were making the church elders uncomfortable. For instance, he did predict the coming of the First World War, you know. But his prophecies increasingly became a source of discomfort amongst the church elders. And he was kicked out of the church, you know. So in part, he goes on this path of what we today call part of the African indigenous church movement. Precisely because the church elders reject his gift of prophecy.
Why though? Why are mainstream churches so against the idea of spiritual gift when the Bible itself talks about it? You know, when, from my understanding, when you get baptized, the Holy Spirit grants gifts to people. Not obviously not everyone, but it is something that should be a norm in churches, and I want to believe that they don't just mean the spirit of the gift of prophecy. There's a wide spectrum of gifts.
Well, I mean, at a very basic level, let's talk about some of the churches we have today, which are not mainstream. Amasonto, Amatende, and so on. You know. In some of those churches, there are big tensions. Because in the congregation, you will have those who emerge as prophets. And then something political, and I say political deliberately, something political happens. That you now have either two centers of power or multiple centers of power within this congregation. You have this prophet who builds a reputation of saying things before they happen, things that do eventually happen. And therefore the congregation begins to look in his or her direction, not in the direction of the pastor. And so something political there develops, couched in spiritual terms or religious terms, but in essence it's political, it's about power. It's about who's going to control this congregation and its resources. So you have that. But if we're talking about the encounter between the colonizer and our ancestors, gifts such as healing, prophecy, could not be countenanced because there was always the possibility that there would be a route back to what the missionary and the colonizer were trying to destroy. So any vestiges of African spirituality had to be destroyed. But there comes a time when the task of destroying these vestiges of African spirituality becomes the tasks of people who look like you and me, of other Africans, Christian Africans, who then preach a gospel of our ancestors as demons, and therefore African spirituality as demonic. Because you may have noticed that this rejection of these gifts is also couched in terms of rejecting the satanic, rejecting the demonic as the source of these gifts. But if these gifts were allowed to proliferate, I believe there was a fear that they could not coexist peacefully with Christian doctrine, at least as preached by the missionaries here. But ultimately their fear is that they would displace Christian doctrine. I think ultimately that was that was the fear.
Sure.
But if you go back to your question about our ancestors accepting Christianity, not all proponents of African indigenous churches agree that these churches come about because they needed to continue practicing African spirituality under the hood of Christianity. There are those who say, no. Something new was created, neither Christian nor African. There are those who argue that some of the churches we call African independent churches were neither Christian nor African. They were something new. But in them was embedded the Christian and the African. Now, whether that is the case is a matter of opinion, but there are those who argue that.
Because I do understand that not all African indigenous churches view aspects of spirituality the same way, especially when it comes to healing, because there are those who outright reject Ubungoma, for instance. I think most of them do. They only accept it if it falls in line with certain of their requirements.
Yes.
You know, like for example, I do know that well, you can go to the, if you can be Sangoma and go to the ZCC,
yes,
if you reject certain aspects of Ubungoma.
Yes.
But your gift can still function in there.
Yes.
You can still heal. It's just that you need to shift to a different modality. Like, you can't throw bones. You have, yes, to, you know. Yes. But you can use water for example.
Well, I mean, this brings me to a question that may seem unrelated, but has been with me the past 2 weeks. And it's a question about the nature of the spirit.
Mm.
In my view, spirits have no nationality.
Hmm.
So the fact that my great-great-great-grandfather or his great-great-great-grandfathers came from Lesotho does not make their spirit Sotho.
Hmm.
I don't know whether that makes sense.
I understand.
And therefore, when we talk about African spirituality, spirituality as a practice, I sort of get what we are talking about. But as I sort of also don't get it.
Mm.
Because I don't believe that the fact that the historical figures that were here before us were African means that their spirit are African.
Mm.
The spirit is transcendent.
Yeah.
So why am I saying this? I'm saying this because even in our practice of African spirituality, there are things we impose on the spirit that are not of the spirit. There are things we impose on the spirits of our ancestors which are not of the spirit of our ancestors. So in our human setting, certain things happen. I will join, as you say, they say ZCC, and they say, fine, we sangong, but we have rules in this church and we have our own church doctrines, and therefore you will not be allowed to do A, B, C, D. Okay? Now, the challenge for me as a Sangoma who accepts those strictures is this. Where did the guidance come from for me to accept them? Did it come from my ancestors? Or does it come from a sense of insecurity about Ubungoma and finding a place where I can be accepted, not because I'm a Sangoma, despite the fact that I'm a Sangoma? And as such places, can such places be the home of Ubungoma?
Hmm.
Because for me, Ubungoma, amongst other things, is a function of the transcendent nature of the spirits of our ancestors.
Hmm.
In other words, they are larger than the church.
Hmm.
They are larger than any human institution. They are larger than any human belief, tradition, or culture.
Mm.
And therefore, if as a Sangoma I accept those strictures, I am making them small, smaller than their transcendent nature.
Mm.
And then on our part, as a Sangoma, who are faced with other challenging questions. Mm. Is it possible for a Sangoma to be a Christian? Mm. And that question is problematic on so many fronts. Mm. Firstly, because it assumes that being Christian is the only thing a Sangoma can be. So you have Mandla Mandela, who converts to Islam. Mm-hmm. And elders say, that is an African. And I laugh, I kill myself laughing, because I look at them, they are carrying Bibles. You know? So the question for me is not whether as a Sangom, whether I can be a Christian. The question is whether I can belong to other religions.
And function within your calling.
Yes, that's the question for me.
Yes.
So if the answer is yes, a Sangoma can be a Christian, then the answer must also be a Sangoma can be a Muslim, can be a Hindu, to the extent that he will be allowed, she will be allowed to be a Sangoma. Mm-hmm. Except that reality tells us that for a Sangoma to belong to these religions, Isangoma will have to shed himself or herself of certain things that make him Isangoma, certain things that go with Ubungoma. And therefore the answer, maybe the answer is Isangoma cannot be a member of a religion that asks him or her to shed aspects of Ubungo. Maybe that's the answer. Mm. And the question, therefore, is there a religion anywhere in the world that will not ask of Ubungoma to shed aspects of itself to be acceptable to that religion? I know of no such religion. Mm. Then, as a Sangom, I must then ask myself this question. Why? Now, Nando, you are looking.
I'm looking.
You are looking, yes, at Umsamoa.
Yes.
There's a Bible.
There's a Bible.
There's a cross.
There's a cross.
In fact, there are three crosses.
And there's Jesus there.
And then there's Jesus there.
Yes. In your
Umsamoa. In Umsamoa. Mm-hmm. Why? Because, as I say, Ngahambane is two, Nyasesonto. But the fact that Ngahambane is two Nyasesonto does not resolve my problem. Here's my problem. Mm. I come here, Mpash. Mm. I come here and I pray. Mm. When I pray, I feel like I'm praying to two gods. Mm. The God of the Christian and the God of our ancestors before they converted to Christianity. Mm. And I keep on having these conversations with God because I know that there's only one God. So the fact that when I come here to pray, I experience God as two different gods, that conflict suggests to me that we must still have much deeper conversations about Christianity and other religions, and whether there's a place in these religions for Ubungoma. And my answer is this. If I'm right in saying that Ubungoma is a function of that which is spiritual and therefore transcendent, religion as human, as man-made, at best, is a subset of that, at best. Is a subset of that. You know?
Okay.
Which means to me, therefore, the question you should be asking is whether Ubungoma can be the home of any religion. Now, ubungoma, for me, being something much bigger than that which is done and believed by izangoma. So izangoma themselves are a subset of ubungoma. And in my view, ubungoma precedes the physical manifestation that is isangoma.
Okay.
And if that is the case, maybe the question you should ask, the question that is facing us as izangoma, is whether ubungoma can be the home of any religion. And if you pose it that way, I suspect that the answer is no. And if the answer is no, then you're left with a choice that we must make. Should then isangoma as an individual make a choice to be part of a certain religion, to be part of a certain Christian denomination? And when that sangoma is in church on Sunday or Saturday, must lose part of himself or herself for the duration of the service, because that's the only way he can be Christian or she can be Christian.
Maybe that's not necessarily a complex thing to do.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because there are people who function with across different modalities.
Yes.
You know. And they often say that I will function within a specific space according to the needs of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And for example, there's a particular thing that I have to do where I have to put on ispig, I have to put on my, you know, my church garments, my whatever they would term it as.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not putting on amabhayi, I'm not putting on my, you know. And so I'm assuming that there is a way of sort of moving between, not necessarily choosing in between, but rather moving between the different things. But now, here's my dilemma, and where I think it does get a bit complicated for me. I want to say, from what I'm learning, right, because you've also said that ubungoma, you know, is something that precedes the physical manifestations, right? And spirit is an ascended entity that understands things broadly. Isithunywa then, to me, right, proves the validity of Christianity. Because if a being is transcendent, they're above the need to attach to any belief. Right? So that means that those who have transcended are on the other side, and they are still seeing or resonating with something in Christianity or in the Bible or something within that cosmology.
Yes.
That they then want it to be carried on generations after them.
Okay. Well, let's look at it this way then. You have izangoma who tell you that an African cannot be a Christian. Mm. Being Christian is an African. There are those who say, to the extent that an African can choose to be Christian, isangoma cannot be a Christian, because Christianity and ubungoma are like oil and water. Okay? Then we have the reality of isangoma like me. Abahamba nesithunywa, umndawe. And some of us, even with spirits that fall outside what the list of spirits that izangoma talk about. Okay? My dilemma is this, and I have this conversation here with my ancestors all the time. I say to them, in our conversations as izangoma, there is a conflict about this thing called isithunywa. Okay? We have izangoma who reject isithunywa. reject it because it is something Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Its roots are Christian. They therefore reject it as such. In fact, you have Izangoma who say that ancestor of yours is Thunywalesi. It's Thunywasesonto. It's not Idlozi. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Idlozi are those who did not convert to Christianity. In fact, I'm sure you have come across Izangoma who say, well, you know, Ba Profeti or Laba Bahamba Nesthunywa and so on. Not really authentic, you know. Mm-hmm. We have that.
Mm.
You know? But when I come here, I first acknowledge the reality that Ngihamba Nesthunywa.
Mm.
But I also acknowledge the fact that Ngihamba Neminyumimoya. I also acknowledge with some of Imimoya Ngihamba Nayo are the spirits of my ancestors who did not convert to Christianity. And so I say to them, look, in my view, as Izangoma may disagree, but in my view, nonke, you are my ancestors, all of you.
Mm.
And I need all of you in my process of becoming, because each minute I'm in a process of becoming spiritually. And I say, I need all of you. But I experience a conflict. And the site of that conflict is my body and my spirit. Between those of you who converted to Christianity and those of you who did not convert to Christianity. And that conflict is not limited to my lineage. In other words, to those in my lineage who did not convert and those who did. I sense nationally this conflict.
Mm.
Partly the source of this conflict is the restlessness of those who died because they converted to Christianity, who were killed by those who did not. Because those things did happen.
Mm.
We know of families where family members were killed because they converted to Christianity. In fact, we have saints in the Catholic Church who are saints on who are saints on that basis. But we also have amongst our ancestors those who died because they refused to embrace Christianity. Okay? So you have that restlessness of these spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the conflict. But the restlessness or the conflict manifests in my body as a site of the conflict and my spirit as a site of the conflict as umbango. Those who did not convert and those who did convert engaged in this conflict umbango over this body. Because they both want to do their work through this body. And I experience it sometimes as one saying, why uphakamisa laba ongaphakamisi laba? And then I say to them, I need all of you. And lombango makes my body sick. And that is true, it does. It makes my body sick. And therefore, I need harmony between you. Those of you who converted to Christianity and those of you who did not, I need harmony between you because lack of harmony between you makes me sick, literally makes my body sick. So it seems to me one of the challenges that faces us is how do we reach a state of harmony between those spirits of our ancestors who converted to Christianity and those who did not. And it seems to me, to the extent that deaths did occur, we should be talking about some kind of cleansing, in the absence of which this conflict will continue unabated in our bodies and our spirits, but will also manifest as divisive discourses about the spiritual amongst us as Izangong.
Okay. So maybe this might be something that can help resolve this. And that is to understand the nature of spirit. And in this regard, my question is Isithunywa something that came about through Christianity, or is it an adaptation of something that had already been in existence? Because I want to look at what is the function of Isithunywa.
Okay.
What does it do? And I have a very limited understanding of this. Yes. So I from what I understand, it is to do a lot with prophecy and healing through water.
Yes.
Right. I don't doubt that this is a capacity that people have had before colonization came.
Yes.
So is it a matter of it adapted to the colonization? Because it also makes me think of, does it mean that 100 years from now, should something very intense happen to our psyche that will have the birth of another spirit that will be called something else? You know, so is this Tunya something new, or is it something old?
Yes. Well, let me be practical again. Let me talk about what happens here, Kulendumba.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are people, they walk in here, and immediately Isithunywa announces itself. Not only does Isithunywa announce itself, it says to me, "Angifune miti." So lengane, angifune miti. You are not going to use umuti. Ne? I want white candles, I want yellow candles, I want water. Ne? That's what Isithunywa will say to me, and I will respect what it says and do accordingly. You know? And I've seen here what happens when Isithunywa says, "Angifuni impepho, angifuni snafu," and I proceed to kushisa impepho and use snafu. Isithunywa will announce or will proclaim his displeasure in very unambiguous ways. Now, another thing I've experienced with some of the people who come here is how Isithunywa not only instructs me in terms of ikhandlela amanzi yabona, but expresses a rejection of the other. And I've experienced the same with the other rejecting Isithunywa. You know? Which means, to me, whatever conflicts may have ensued between our ancestors when they were still here, conflicts that ensued because of converting and not converting to Christianity are still playing out in the spiritual realm, you know? And I say realm because that's how we talk, but I don't believe there's a spiritual realm. I don't believe there's separation between where we are and the spiritual realm, by the way. It's all the same thing to me. But that's another story. And that is why I keep on saying to them, now that you have made me conscious of this conflict, what must we do to bring harmony between you so that there's harmony in us, so that there's harmony amongst us, because we need all of you. Now, look at it in another way. Again, if I must be practical, one of my gifts is that of being a teacher. I'm a teacher.
Yes, that much is very obvious.
Yes. And if you look at my lineage, it's a lineage of teachers. Mm. So which means my lineage in spiritual terms was given the task of teaching. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That's the service my ancestors perform
mm-hmm.
for humanity, to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But I look at my other ancestors. I get accused of wisdom unfairly sometimes,
mm-hmm.
but people accuse me of being wise. Again, I have the very real appreciation for the fact that this wisdom is not mine.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at my lineage, when those older than me talk about the grandfather, great-grandfather, and so on, great-grandmother, and so on, I see where it comes from. So this is not a gift to me. This is mm-hmm. a gift long ago that was given to my lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Others, in other families, you'll have the gift of leadership.
Mm.
You'll have the gift of prophecy, and so on. You know, so in one sense, we must look at these gifts not in individual terms, but we must look at them in terms of gifts that reside in certain families, in certain lineages, in certain clans, because those lineages, those clans, had to leverage those gifts in service of humanity or the community as a whole. You are right that the gift of prophecy was there before Christianity. You know, again, you have an example of how we try to impose our beliefs on the spiritual. I am certain that if we had a conference with our ancestors, a lot of what we believe they would find nonsensical. You know, and so in churches, including African indigenous churches, where certain aspects of Ubungoma are rejected, we must regard that as what it is, a social construct, even if it's in a religious context, but they are social constructs, which have very little or nothing to do with our ancestors as spirit, you know. And so it seems to me that when we look at this question, yes, Tung. And maybe I must start here. One of the things we must stop doing is idealizing our ancestors. Not everything they believed serves us. I think I've said that to you before.
Yes.
So I'm repeating that. We must not idealize our ancestors. There are things that they believed which have very little to do with our ancestors as spirit. You know? So here we come. Group of Sangomas having divisive debates about Istunya, denigrating the dignity of those who have this gift. As something that is not authentically
African.
You know? But that has nothing to do with our ancestors themselves. You know, so what we must do is to say amongst us, as human beings, izangoma and those who are not, there are certain things we believe. To what extent are they in concert with the will and nature of our ancestors? So if you were to put a gun on my head, I would say to you that firstly, we may have to accept that we need to distinguish between Christianity and the Christian. And if we distinguish between the Christian and Christianity, we therefore distinguish between the missionary and the colonized on the one side and Christianity on the other. And if we accept that, we may have to accept that Christianity comes to us to add. But then we have to examine what is it about Christianity that has come to add positively to what we are and what we have. And if I understand what you are saying correctly, you seem to be saying that here is this ancestor who was a Christian. Uhamba nawe manje. Because as spirit, he or she knows better, understands deeper, sees much further than us, and therefore knows much more. And because of that, would not insist on being part of my life, including my spiritual life. Would not insist on using my body for his or her works if this would be harmful to me. So maybe you need another leap of logic to trust your ancestor, but your ancestor would not feed you Christianity if Christianity is harmful. But God gave us brains. We must not insult God by not using our brains. We must use the brains to be discriminating about what it is about Christianity that serves us and what it is about Christianity that does not serve us. What it is about Islam that serves us, what it is about Islam that does not serve us. What it is about any religion our people decide to embrace that serves us, and what it is about it that does not serve us. And maybe that is the approach we should take. The second thing we must do is to embrace the idea that amadlozi awafani. Amadlozi akho nqande may agree with me that this is the approach we should take. Amanye might say, no. This Christianity thing does not work for us. And at that point, I suppose you then have to engage with what they are saying, seek their guidance, negotiate, and I use the word negotiate deliberately, because using this God-given brain, you may take approaches that your ancestors may say, okay, we can live with that. But others must be free also to completely reject the idea of Christianity. We must be free to do all these things that, or to be all of these things.
Because and by extension, it should also be allowed vice versa, that if Umuntu has this Tonya only and it rejects
yes
the other aspect of Ungoma,
yes,
then it must also be acceptable.
It must be acceptable, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And it must be acceptable because if spirit is transcendent, there is nothing to which we must be reduced, or we must reduce ourselves. Mm. I don't know whether that makes sense. Mm.
It is easy to recognize the social political history of how African indigenous churches came about. In fact, as a black South African, you can't not understand it, regardless of whether or not you believe in their doctrine. And that is because you understand the context. You understand why they had to come about. These churches are just over 100 years old, which is quite young in the broader scheme of history, but you have to keep them in their own context, in their own historical context, in order to understand how they function. Let me demonstrate the impact that context has on history. I'm going to read something, and afterwards I'll tell you who wrote it and why. Open quote. They had the infant covered over with flour, that it may deceive the unwary it is placed before him who is to be stained by their rites. This infant is slain by the young pupil. Thirstily, they lick up its blood. Eagerly, they divide its limbs. By this victim, they are pledged together. With this consciousness of wickedness, they are covenanted to mutual silence. Close quote. These are the words of Marcus Cornelius Fronto, as written by Octavius. Take a moment and try to imagine who Fronto was talking about. He goes on to say, "They know one another by secret marks and insignia, and they love one another almost before they know one another. Everywhere also there is, mingled among them, a certain religion of lust, and they call one another promiscuously brothers and sisters, that even a not unusual debauchery may, by the intervention of that sacred name, become incestuous. It is thus that their vain and senseless superstition gloried in crimes." Fronto goes on to describe these people as people who lack education and culture and are crude and ignorant. These words were written somewhere around the year 150. And Marcus Cornelius Fronto was talking about Christians. He was a prominent lawyer, a public speaker, and a teacher. His description of Christians as incestuous cannibals sounds ridiculous today, but you have to remember that he said these things when there was no context for the eating of the body and the drinking of the blood of the Son of God. This was the middle of the first century. It had barely been 100 years since the crucifixion of Jesus. The ink on the Gospels had barely dried, and it was 200 years before Athanasius had compiled the list of the 27 books of the New Testament. When people heard that there were groups of people meeting in secret and eating the body of a person and drinking their blood, they took it very, very literal. But here's where it gets very serious. Marcus Cornelius Fronto was Marcus Aurelius's teacher. And Marcus Aurelius would grow up to become an emperor of Rome, and it was on these teachings by Marcus Cornelius Fronto, the teachings of Christians being incestuous cannibals, that Marcus Aurelius began the persecution of Christians. Over time, the persecution of Christians would become more political. And that was because within the context of the Bible, Jesus saw a broken system, and he was executed because his ideology was becoming a socio-political threat to the authorities and it needed to be stopped.
So the Eucharist, or Holy Communion, was singled out and taken out of its own context and used as propaganda. This is where the persecution of the Christians began. It began by taking aspects of a belief out of its own context. Outside of its own context, early Christianity was translated as a cannibalistic cult, and that planted the seeds for the persecution of its followers. Within its own context, within Christianity's own context, other people's beliefs were translated as devil worshipping. It may sound like I am coming for Christianity, but I'm really not. This is not about the contents of the Bible or whether or not Jesus Christ is the Messiah. This is about people and their actions and the motivations behind those actions. You can take 1 Corinthians 10 as a way to dismiss those African-initiated churches that embrace aspects of African spirituality as not being Christian. But conflict with scripture is not new to any Christian denomination. For instance, there are churches who dispute the nature of the Holy Trinity and the idea that God, the Son, the Holy Spirit are one entity. Denominations such as Pentecostal churches and Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, basically believe that if God is the Father, then it necessarily means that there was a time when Jesus Christ did not exist. And that means that, to a very large extent, he is a lesser being to God. More recently, there have been debates around the ordination of women as priests, which some churches embrace, and some believe it goes directly against what the Apostle Paul stipulated in his letters to the Corinthians, that women must remain silent in the church. Then there's the extremely contentious issue of how one attains salvation, and whether it is by the grace of God through faith in Christ or by one's own good works. This is also tied to the debate about predestination, which essentially boils down to the question of, if all that happens is God's will, then does that mean that before we were all born, God had already decided who is going to heaven and who is going to hell? What is always important to remember is that no belief materialized out of thin air. All forms of spiritual belief systems evolved out of something that came before them. It's like language. Like, all languages have today evolved out of languages that came before them. So the gray area between beliefs is very wide, because all spiritual practices have within them aspects of other practices within their functions. Let me give you a simple example for us as urban Black South Africans. Much of our grieving processes are taken directly from Jewish rituals, from the wearing of black, to the covering of mirrors, to smearing ash on windows, to the evening prayers, to the tombstone unveiling ceremony, right down to that little black piece of fabric that your uncle pins onto his jacket. All of these are Jewish practices, and they infiltrated urban communities through black women who used to work for Jewish homes as domestics. In many ways, the question of whether or not Christianity and African spirituality are compatible, and to what extent they are, will never ever really be resolved. Yet, there are people who are going to find their way to God through Christianity. There are people who are going to find their way to God through Islam. There are many people who will navigate their path through Buddhism. Then there are those for whom African spirituality is what truly resonates with their being. No matter how much faith we have in our own beliefs, we cannot force someone to experience spirituality the same way that we do. And we can certainly not condemn them if they don't. And the same way we demand to have freedom to travel our own unique paths in spirituality, we are also compelled to let others do the same. What remains a solid fact is that one day, 2021 will be described as thousands of years ago. And between now and then, the only constant is change. My name is Vusum Zinlande, and phew, that was a lot. Thank you for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. This was a heavy one. It took some time to put together because I really do not want to touch on this topic on the surface. And I'm aware that there's still a lot that I didn't cover, but I went as deep as I possibly could within the time. And I'm sure that some other aspects we will visit in time to come. But then again, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I really, really love the feedback. It means a lot to me. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.